Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me in studio is radio producer Jonathan Field. Jonathan, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Good. And coming to us from the sandy beaches of Destin is our co-host, Ron Bachman. Ron, good morning.
Good morning to everybody there.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Blue skies, sunny day, nice day in Florida.
Yeah, I think you need to hold that in check with all of our listeners up in Minneapolis and on the East Coast that are stuck in a winter storm.
Hey, tell them, come on down.
Yeah. Well, we got a great program today, and before our first guest in about 10 minutes will be Tom Torrey, the CEO of CoPatient, which is a company uniquely positioned to really help consumers, manage their healthcare expenses. And then following, Tom, in our last segment will be Simeon Schindelman, who is CEO of Brighton Health Plan, which is really going to talk to us about, they're actually the parent company for MagnaCare, which most of us recognize in the self-insurance market. But he's going to be talking really about what they're doing about around building a very unique, integrated, health plan and where the market's changing. So great program today. So, I think, Ron, I think we'd like to talk about today, what we're doing with IHC University and the Learning Center.
Sure. Glad to. This is maybe a first exposure to the audience and sort of announcements about how we're refreshing IHC University. We've sort of had that name around for a while, but in the tradition of IHCC and the whole institute, we're really refreshing it and building it out as the Learning Center for Healthcare Consumerism. And I know you've got your programmers there working furiously so we can get something up and be able to officially have a start date for the new university. But it's pretty exciting. We put together an awful lot of information. We've got an outline and a structure. And basically the mission of the Learning Center or the IHC University is really to provide educational programs, practical research, and all the other aspects of getting to understand healthcare consumerism. We will have a lot of videos. We continue to emphasize the fact that we're in a YouTube world, so we're already building out videos that'll go in there. We have, of course, one of the mainstays of the university is the CHCC certification, the Consumer Healthcare Certification Program that we do as a pre-conference, but we also have an online access to getting that certification. So we have videos for that. We will have continuing education where, in many cases, we're taking those videos that you might watch for the CHCC, which can be, several hours long. We break them up into short segments, so like 5-6 minute segments, so that people who want to understand and get to know and learn about healthcare consumerism can do it at their convenience in sort of 5 minute bites. So if they want to do one or two a day and keep up with it that way, they have the choice to listen to the real long video or to look at little pieces, which we've segmented out. In the research area, that's something that's really exciting. We've been working on for a long time. Sometimes we refer to it as IHC Market Insights. Insights being pulling together all the different aspects of healthcare consumerism. There's a lot of reports out there on HSA, HSA eligible plans, high deductible plans, health reimbursement arrangements, but nobody has really pulled together information on all the different aspects of what we refer to as healthcare consumerism, which is all about wellness and disease management and incentive reward programs that are outside of a specific plan design, like a high deductible health plan. There are other aspects of consumerism. And we're going to try to pull all that together, and we've got that basically done. We need to develop it so that it reads well and is in segments again for people who want to look at the IHC University. And then we're also going to be doing other market surveys, both IHC designated proprietary surveys. But we also know that a lot of people are looking for surveys, whether it's from Kaiser Foundation or it's from one of the insurance carriers or one of the brokerage houses or consulting firms that put out various surveys. And it's troublesome for a benefit manager or a broker to look around the entire market and find the surveys that they want. So in the tradition, again, of IHC, where we're an aggregator and a navigator of information, we're going to try to pull as much of that together in one spot so people can go and find all the different industry surveys that they may need to be researching for whatever decision-making they're going to try to do.
And
there's a couple. Go ahead.
It's pretty important for our listeners out there, not just those that may be interested in joining the IHC University to access the, this learning information. But if you're out there and you have a research report, you have online classes that you would like to showcase in the Learning Center, that's what we're all about, really putting those in one place in the IHC University.
Absolutely. I think we can really have a foundation to build on and take that kind of information that others have been developing and be sure that they are reaching not only maybe a mailing list or a population that they are already tapped into, but the whole population of people who come to IHC for that kind of information. But, you know, there's a couple other aspects that we're building in. I know it sounds like a lot. I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but we're going to have an IHC law library, if you will. So, again, thinking of this as a university, we're going to build out a library. And the law library would be things like a compliance corner where we do a monthly review, an executive summary of some particular legislation, regulation that we want to accumulate. We've been putting them out in the on the websites, but we're going to try to accumulate all those and put them here in the library. And then we'll have links to the federal Affordable Care Act laws and regulations. That's also a difficult thing for many people to do, to find where in the world you go to the HHS website, which covers lots of things, or Treasury website, which covers lots of things, or Department of Labor, which covers a whole lot more than healthcare. But where do you find that? We're going to try to provide a single source to be able to find that kind of information on healthcare. And the library one. Good.
Mm-hmm. Ron, that's a nice talking about law library and compliance. That's a nice segue to remind our audience that we do have a third guest today and a very important guest today that will be joining the program in our final segment. Jason Westfall, who's legislative analyst with TASC, one of the leading TPAs in the country. So I think that dovetails nicely with what you're talking about there, the law library. We'll really dig into his insights on where he sees legislation, compliance, et cetera.
Right. Well, he may be a good resource because one of the other areas in that law library we want to build out is what we call Ask a Lawyer. We've got an awful lot of good lawyers who have participated in the conferences over the years. And, of course, John Hickman is sort of the star of it all. But we've had other organizations like Groom Law and others that we're going to see if we can't allow our audiences out there who tap into this to be able to ask a question about some topic and get a basic response back. We're not going to provide, you know, lawyer fees by the hour, but sometimes it's a very simple question or a direction. Where do I go to get this? What's the best legal source for this? And if we don't already have it identified, the Ask a Lawyer segment that we want to build in here could be very helpful to many of the enrollees in the university.
Yeah, and we go on
from there.
And I think, again, Ron, we got about a minute to go before Tom joins, but I think along the lines around the compliance corner and the Ask the Lawyer concept is that, you know, this is our ability to give you a snapshot, you know, feedback on a topic of interest to, that you may be interested in, but then connect you with, you know, the lawyers and the compliance experts that are part of our IHC family. John Hickman, of course, you know, Chris Condolucci, Bill Sweetum, and I don't mean to exclude any of our other compliance experts sitting around us. So, it, again, that navigator and guide philosophy that we have is to give you some answers, give you some insight, but then direct you to those experts that can work with you, you know, should you need more information and more help.
So I think the people are going to actually find the enrollment in the IHC University is going to be a very valuable asset for them to be able to join in and participate in, to contribute to, and to find information that they might otherwise have a difficult time. Save people a lot of time in getting to the real answers.
Well, that's good. That's great, Ron. And, you know, let's move to how we help consumers really manage, you know, their expenses. And joining us on the program is really a friend of the Institute and a leader that's been in this marketplace for quite some time and is now taking over a leadership role with CoPatient. It's Tom Torrey, CEO of CoPatient. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good to have you on the program. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. I do wish I was with Ron in Florida, though, because it's snowing quite hard here in the Northeast. Come on down.
Yeah, I know. I told him to be easy with that, Tom, since you're sitting up north.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom. Well, listen, we look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks at our private exchange forum in Dallas, but give our audience a little background around CoPatient and what you guys are doing up there.
Sure. I think I'll start by talking a little bit about the roots and the founding of CoPatient give a little bit of background on the organization. CoPatient was founded in 2012 by a couple of folks who were working at Athena Health at the time, and they were working on an initiative to understand the issues associated with consumer payments to providers. And for those of us who have been in the consumer side of the industry for a long time, understand the challenges associated with consumer payments and the shift that's going on to individuals and the burden they're facing. And as part of that initiative, these two folks learned a couple of things. The first is that, in general, consumer payments to providers are broken. Again, no surprise there. Second, that providers typically collected something in the neighborhood of 20 cents on the dollar owed to them by consumers, which that number just still to this day amazes me that that's such a low percentage. And the other thing they learned was that consumers don't pay providers for many reasons. Sometimes it's because it's a large bill and they're unable to pay, but more often it's a challenge understanding what they're being billed for and whether what they're being billed for is appropriate and is fair and reasonable. These learnings and some other research led to the idea of creating a company that would reduce the friction in consumer to provider payments, and so CoPatient was born.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit of background on the history of the organization.
So,
now, I'm sorry, get that.
No, go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
I was going to kind of go on to talk a little bit about what we do and how it works, or did you have a question?
No, that's perfect. That's what I wanted to ask you. So
definitely.
You're reading my mind,
no,
Tom.
Let me jump in with a question there. I think I think this is really helpful and important what Tom's going through, because I don't think patients really understand the bills. I always say that the document that they send you called an explanation of benefits is the first thing you get in the mail that you ignore because you don't know what your final costs are.
This is not a bill.
Right, this is not a bill. One of the other things that maybe you can explain, Tom, to the listeners out there is, and it's sort of insider language, but it's something that affects them, I think, in the area that your company is focusing on. It's something that is usually referred to as balance billing.
Sure.
So when you get a payment from the insurance company, covers part of your cost, and you got a copayment, but if you're not a network provider that is limited on charging something else, there's a balance billing that you may get to surprise bill. Why don't you explain to our audience what that's all about?
Sure. And, Ron, it's a great topic because it's a big part of what our business is focused on is balance billing. So, when you look at out-of-network transactions, when you go to a provider that's not in your network, which is increasing in frequency, as the world has changed and there are narrowing networks as a result of trying to control costs. And in addition, some providers are just opting out of networks. One of the examples that are used quite often is anesthesiologists are typically out of network as a way to try to maximize their payments. So you end up with a lot more out-of-network transactions, and what frequently happens with an out-of-network transaction is some sort of customary and reasonable payment is made to the provider, but the individual is then balance billed for the remaining amount. And that customary and reasonable payment can be very, very small, and you might have a $10,000 out-of-network transaction or a claim, and you end up getting paid $500 by your plan, your health plan, because it's an out-of-network transaction. So now your balance billed for that remaining $9,500. That is an increasing challenge in the marketplace, and it is an area that we're focused on, is helping consumers manage and reduce those balance billing situations. Frequently what happens is that folks are billed at some crazy multiple of Medicare. They might be billed 250, 300% of Medicare rates, because it hasn't been adjusted by the
health plan, and then the individual ends up paying a large amount. So that is a big challenge in the industry, and that's one of the things that we're focused on.
Hey, Tom.
So, Tom,
this is Doug. How do you differ from the, you know, the many health advocacy firms out there?
So what I'd like to do is maybe to answer your question, Doug, is just give a quick overview of how our process works and then talk
please
to how we're differentiated, if that's okay.
Please.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, in summary, we work with consumers to help them with their out-of-pocket expenses. And a big part of that is helping them understand complex medical bills. When you go to the provider, your provider, your primary care provider, and you go for your annual visit, usually not too complicated, but let's say you have an illness or a disease that you're managing, or maybe you get hurt, you might receive an extremely complicated bill with multiple providers, multiple claims associated with it. And in some cases, in my case, and I've been in the industry for a long time, you never quite understand what you're getting billed for or what's on that, whether
right
the billing is fair and accurate and reasonable. And, you know, we work with consumers to help them understand that. And when it's not fair and reasonable, we work to reduce the amount that's owed. We do this today in two ways. One is we go direct to consumers, and then we also go through the employer, benefit administrator, and health plan channel. When we do it direct to consumer, we offer them very much a straight negotiation process. When we do it through the employer channel, we wrap around a whole bunch of other services, which I'll talk about in a little bit as we go through our discussion. But now to answer your question, Doug, and how we differentiate ourselves, the most common organization that we're compared to is Health Advocate. And so I think that would be a great way to illustrate how we might be different.
Yep.
Health Advocate, a good organization, provides a broad range of consumer advocacy services that helps consumers manage through the healthcare experience. We are specifically focused on managing provider expense and helping
right
folks reduce their out-of-network and other expenses they have associated with providers. We're sort of an inch wide and a mile deep on that topic.
Okay.
We have a broad set of expertise, and that's how we differentiate ourselves.
Tom, could you? I could see you even partnering with them. Is that part of, you know, your potential opportunity is to partner with some of these advocacy firms because you're vertically deep in your core competency?
Yeah, absolutely, Doug. We haven't to this date gone down that path, but that is definitely something that we could do, and we are exploring lots of different partnerships, but that would definitely be among things we would look at.
So Tom, we have employers listening. So if I'm an employer, what are your services for me? And I think you outlined what the services are for, you know, my employees, just to use me
right
as an example as employer. So what's your services to me, and what's the business model for
sure
between an employer and yourself?
Sure. So when we sell through to employers, our positioning is the following. The first is that we come in and typically, self-funded employers probably more our sweet spot than perhaps,
sure,
a fully funded employer. But so let's focus on that for a minute. So we go to a self-funded employer. The first thing that we would do is use our tools to analyze their claims and identify opportunities in their claims patterns. Do they have a lot of out-of-network transactions? Do they have a high concentration in certain providers? Just take a look at their claims pattern and then identify where there might be opportunities. We then use that same claims review to identify out-of-network claims and proactively work to ensure that those claims are fair, reasonable, and do that before those are balance billed. Frequently, those claims are balance billed to the consumers we talked about earlier. Our approach is to get those claims, look at them, identify opportunities to reduce those claims before they're balance billed. The third thing that our solution does is look for other sort of issues with those claims. Maybe they're very high billing rates, maybe there's errors, maybe there's duplicates, and our technology can identify those claims that are sort of out of whack, and then we can work with their employees to address those particular opportunities. Perhaps they were double billed, or perhaps the rate's just very high, and then we can, proactively reach out to their employees and say, hey, we've got this claim for you. Our research tells us that it's probably incorrect. We'd like to help you resolve that. And then the last opportunity is that when we identify patterns of perhaps one provider that represents a significant out-of-portion out-of-network activity for you, we can work with that that provider to negotiate prospectively a lower rate for you. So that, you know, those are the four key things we can do. There's a lot more to it, but that's the four sort of key points of what our solution does.
That's great. Ron, do you have a question for Tom?
Yeah, Tom, I think what you're doing is growing in need and is desperately needed in the marketplace. And the main reason I see it, and I'd like you maybe to comment on it, as we see consolidation in the marketplace, hospitals are becoming more dominant. They're buying up other hospitals. They're buying up physician practices. And you mentioned anesthesiologists as an example where there could be an out-of-network provider. I think most people think if their primary care physician is in-network and they're going to a hospital that's in-network, that therefore all the providers of care within that hospital are network providers. And these days, an anesthesiologist and radiologist typically are employees of the hospital. Therefore, they say, why should I give a discount? I'm going to charge as much as I can because you can't avoid me. You're going to have to go to this hospital. Therefore, I'm not a network provider. I'm not going to discount. So you wind up with these enormous bills. And in many ways, it's not fair to the consumer because it's a total surprise to them.
Yeah.
And it needs somebody like you to step in and an organization like Copay to really pull these people back and have reasonable charges. So is that a big part of the market, what you really have to address?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we see a couple of big trends, Ron, to sort of respond and talk about the trends we see in the market. There's a couple of trends. One is the consolidation of both on the payment side and the provider side, right? The payers and providers are consolidating, which has interesting dynamics and creates interesting dynamics in the industry. So that's the first thing we're seeing. The second thing that we're seeing is that the adoption of narrow networks has just been broad, right, as a way to control expenses. And, and I'm a true believer in CDH and the sort of movement that's underway and the adoption of high deductible health plans, but it does have a short term and probably, kind of a midterm impact on consumers by raising their deductibles. So those kind of three things come together to create a real burden on consumers, and addressing those is what we're focused on. And your specific example of those out-of-network transactions that take place, you may get an invoice, a medical bill that has some in-network and some out-of-network things on it, and I, as the CEO of this business, wouldn't be able to understand that.
Right.
And, you and the common person can't really do that, so that's what our technology enables, is to identify those opportunities and to work with folks to make sure that it's fair. So, exactly what our focus is.
Hey, Tom.
We're good.
Time flies when we're having fun here. We've got about a minute and a half to go, and I want to allow you to kind of, repackage this and leave our audience with some takeaways and how they can connect with you, how they can, contact you.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I just want to again say thanks for having me on the show. It's been great being here, and I've always been a big fan of your organization, and I'm very excited on the opportunity to join you. So just a couple of key things. In 2015, the amount of the level of out-of-pocket incurred by consumers, out-of-pocket expenses, is closing in on $500 billion, driven by the trends that we're talking about. And our solution really gives individuals and employers a way to help them move through this process as this change is happening, and enable sort of taking some control over it. So that's really what our mission is all about. And we are excited to be focused on it, and we're excited to be associated with IHC in doing so. And we think it really makes sense for employers to offer this solution to their employees as this transition happens. And to reach me or to reach out to our organization, feel free to contact me at tom.torre, T-O-R-R-E, at copatient.com, or call me at 207-233-8974.
Tom, listen, I appreciate it. You've done some good work up there. Keep it up, and we'll see you soon. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Tom. Ron, I think it's interesting, what Tom's doing and what many others are doing. I had some conversations this week with people about the health literacy piece and people recognizing that we can't just turn a light. You and I talk about this all the time. We can't turn a light bulb on and say, hey, now you're a consumer of health and healthcare. They need help, and they need tools and services like what Tom's doing and what others are doing. So I think it's the innovation driving around helping consumers deal with that gap, deal with that shared responsibility that they not have, that you know that they now have.
Yeah, no, it's definitely part of consumerism. He's filling a void and a gap because as the market changes, as he said, everybody thinks that, you know, if their primary care is a network provider, their hospital's in the network, that everything's in network and you've got discounts negotiated by your insurance carrier or through your company's third-party administrator. And that's just not true anymore. And it's becoming more and more the case with especially, again, anesthesiologists, radiologists, and many of the hospitals are buying up physician practices, and the same sort of dynamic is occurring. And we know we've seen in the marketplace, for example, in a number of personal experiences where previously a doctor's office visit might have been $125. And now when you go to that same doctor's office, he hasn't moved, but the bill comes out of a hospital system. So he basically sold his practice off, and they're billing it as a hospital outpatient, which allows them to code it up and to charge more money for that. And if you don't know that, you get these bills in and you're afraid somebody's going to do a collection agency. And so I think what he's doing is very much filling a gap in consumer knowledge. Hopefully consumers get educated. But this is so far in the weeds, you kind of need a little bit of extra expertise and understanding of what's going on in the marketplace as it changes. So I think Tom and Copay is really really filling a need, and I think they'll be very successful.
You know, and you know, the whole concept that decision support here, expense management, health literacy, just a lot of innovation taking place. You know, I was kind of surprised. You know, Kaiser came out with a report recently that said because of the lack of health and healthcare literacy, that consumerism is dead. And I completely completely disagree with that. Not because we sit in the chairs that we sit in here at the Institute, but it's common sense that that consumers are going to have to get engaged, and we're going to have to help them, and we're going to have to hold their hand. You know, but it doesn't mean it's dead. It means we're still at the beginning. You know, consumerism, you know, has maybe moved to the main street with employers and health plans and others, but we're still in the infancy with consumers. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, you know, it's sort of like the old story about, you know, Mark Twain when he was reported, you know, as having passed away, and he wrote back and said, you know, the reports of my death are premature. And so I don't think healthcare consumerism is going away, and that the consumer is dead because they can't learn and understand these nuances. There are going to be additional support services, going to be more healthcare education, more literacy, and it takes a while. This is a very complicated business, and it's going to be simplified with technology, just as many other industries have been simplified with technology and new services coming in. It's a very exciting time, and I think some of these issues are going to develop new organizations with new services, much like Copay. So it'll all work out in the end, and the consumer is going to wind up with the benefits of it.
Yep, it is. Hey, I want to remind our audience as they're waiting on Simeon that you still can join us at Private Exchange Forum in Dallas coming up February 23rd to 24th. We're really excited about
the event that's coming together. I also wanted to mention on the IHC University related to that is one of the other segments that we're going to have in the IHC University is the ability for people who either have been to the conference and want to review some of the materials after they go home, go back and refresh themselves, or people who maybe couldn't get to a conference. We're going to have videos there of the conferences,
absolutely.
And we'll even do some streaming of videos at the right point. So, I mean, it's really we want to get people involved with IHC and give them various channels and avenues to get there. And that's what I know you're trying to build out, and it'll be available in its full-blown nature before too long here.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the videos are already there from, you know, our last year and a half worth of events, and I think that, you know, if somebody's trying to figure out whether they should show up in person or struggling with budget dollars, you know, sign up for the IHC University and get a flavor of what we talk about and the expertise that's shared in the panels. I think they would be very interested in the engaged discussions that are taking place in those general sessions.
Absolutely. It's very exciting. I think the, you know, as we go forward with the forums, you'll be doing more videos, so it's always up to date. New speakers, new topics, new issues, because the market keeps changing. We get new regulations out. You know, there's no telling what's going to happen if we have a new administration next year and whole healthcare gets, you know, turned on its head again, and we try to move forward with some different approaches or different changes. So, you know, the whole idea of IHC is to keep people informed on what's going on and get them educated. So there's an awful lot to continue to share with everybody.
Well, let's continue the discussion about innovation with our next guest, who is an industry leader and in this market, and he's now heads up Brighton Health Plan Solutions. It's the parent company of MagnaCare. But joining us on the program is Simeon Schindelman, CEO of Brighton Health Plan. Simeon, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, great to talk to you again. Tell us about your new role here and heading up Brighton, and what's Brighton up to in MagnaCare.
Well, Brighton is this is a really exciting time for the health, just the healthcare business generally. Is I imagine anybody who's listening here and is interested in what we're talking about would probably agree that the rate of change and the amount of change happening across healthcare is higher than any of us, even somebody like me who's been in this business for over 30 years that we've experienced in the past. That creates a ton of opportunity. Brighton Health Plan Services is a division of Brighton Health Group. And the health plan services side is made up of MagnaCare, a business that's been around here in the greater New York, New Jersey area for several decades, serving the self-insured marketplace generally and having a particularly strong presence in the Taft-Hartley market. In addition to that, we have commercial business, and we have some what I think are very interesting and exciting ideas for some additional product we'll be bringing to the commercial market over the balance of this year.
That's exciting stuff. Yeah, we've had Joe with us before at MagnaCare, who spoke at our events before, and we look forward to having you be at one of our events in the near term. So, you know, can you talk about some of the new things that's coming?
Absolutely. I'd love to do that. One of the reasons that I joined this organization, Brighton Health Plan Solutions, is that the parent company, Brighton Health Group, has two very important assets. And one of those is the health plan business that where I'm CEO. The other one is a physician management business, which sits next to me. These are the two organizations that make up Brighton Health Group. And I talk about this because our physician management business is a practice management company that's called Privia. And Privia is actually right now the fastest growing physician practice management company in America. It focuses on primary care practices. Privia also has an organization called Dwell Family Doctors. That's a staff model primary care service. And I tell you that story because when we think about what we'll be bringing to market and the changes that we'll be trying to drive, they incorporate combining what primary care physicians do every day with what health plans do. And we have both of those assets here at Brighton Health Group. And that's because we believe that the primary care physician has tremendous impact on cost and quality, and we intend to elevate the role of the position, the positioning, the visibility of the primary care doctor, and that will lead to very meaningful improvements in both the cost and quality delivered by the healthcare system.
Simeon, is there, with your primary care, you know, practice management group, is there going to be a movement towards adopting the direct primary care business model with the groups?
Well, we think when we this model that we intend to follow, well, I guess I should say we would have several models because in the end our focus will be on not only elevating the position and the influence of the primary care doctor, but making sure that access for everybody who's part of our plan is very easy. So you'll see several models of how primary care physicians are accessed, from relatively tight models where services should be accessed first through a primary care physician, through models where our presence in the market with both managed and staff model practices simply make access easier for all of the individuals and families that we serve. So I hope that's somewhat helpful, but the point is that the more we can get the primary care doctor involved without unduly restricting the access that our membership has, that combination is going to be very powerful for downstream utilization of services, downstream plans of care, relationships between primary care and specialist physicians. And so what we can have because of that stream of information and that connection with doctors has a chance to have important value for our customers.
That's very interesting. Ron, do you have a question for Simeon?
Yeah, Simeon, I think one of your sweet spots is the Taft-Hartley plans, the union plans. And you're in a particularly high-cost market anyway in the New York, New Jersey area. And I'm wondering about what they're referred to as Cadillac plans. A lot of our listeners out there have been dealing with the potential of this extra tax that's in the Affordable Care Act if their benefit levels get too high. And that's particularly an issue with many union plans. We know that the legislation recently delayed that for a couple of years. But what are you doing to help your union plans that may be in that position of high-cost plans and they want to stay under any potential Cadillac plan level?
So that's a terrific question, and that's a very important question because it places what we would think of as an undue burden on the plans that provide rich benefits. So let me share three comments about how we think about that. Number one is, frankly, we anticipate the Cadillac tax will be moved out more, again, beyond the duration it was already moved out, and then it's quite possible it won't come to fruition. That's one. Second is that what the Cadillac tax ends up doing in many, to a great degree, is it places this undue burden on the plan sponsor and on the individual participant because it increases the liability at the individual participant level. Either one way or another, one way by benefit levels get reduced, they become less rich, and so the liability at the member level is higher, and that's not a real good result, or premiums go up because the tax gets passed on to the participant by the plan sponsor. So number one, we think it'll be pushed out again. Number two, we think it'll be pushed out because it's probably not as good an idea as it may have appeared a couple of years ago. Yeah. All that said, we've got to be prepared. And that's why the work that we're doing, we think, is so important because the only other way to address this is to figure out how to deliver the same necessary and important level of care that people get today at a lower cost structure today, which is why our approach is something we believe very strongly can reduce cost and help keep plan sponsors, especially these Taft-Hartley funds with relatively richer benefits under Cadillac tax levels. So it really ends up becoming to be prepared, figure out how to deliver great care at better cost, as opposed to simply how to reduce benefits.
Simeon, one of the other challenges that plan sponsors have in dealing with their workforce is the 80-20 rule. 20% of the people driving 80% of the cost. What are you doing to really help plan sponsors deal with that?
That's a question we think about a lot because for plan sponsors to manage costs, they need to understand who the highest cost people are. And what's driving cost? And when we analyze this practically every day, and the reason is we think that understanding exactly where cost is incurred within the population is probably the most important step towards reducing total medical cost. And I say that because the 80-20 rule is at least 80-20 in healthcare. So to the extent we can help plan sponsors help their participants make the best decisions about courses of treatment, about programs that reduce chronic illness or repeated needs for visits to expensive sites of service and kinds of service, and three, getting services from the most cost-effective physicians and locations, we can have a very significant impact on cost. It's actually, I probably wouldn't be overstating it to say we think this is the number one place we can help, is this 80-20 rule idea. So we look at this every day. And I'm going to now track you back to what I said about primary care. We know with a high degree of confidence that primary care doctors have a lot of influence on the utilization patterns of individual plan participants. We see that in our data. And so we believe that through our staff model and our managed physician practice management businesses, that we believe that through those businesses, if we can help the primary care physicians introduce the knowledge and the information to plan participants so they are incented to choose the most cost-effective courses of treatment, the most cost-effective places of treatment, and the most cost-effective physicians providing the treatment, always keeping quality in mind, we can materially impact costs. This is right in line. This 80-20 rule is totally in line with our business plan and how we think we'll bring real value to plan sponsors. We're very, very excited about that.
Simeon, with a lot of the services that you're talking about, and you know, are you rolling this out and to have a national footprint? I know MagnaCare is in a specific geographic market. Are you going to have a national footprint?
So that's a topic we also talk about a lot. We have a three-stage plan here, uh-huh. And I'll try to briefly describe it and then maybe make sense of it at the end. The first stage is we pay a lot of attention to our Taft-Hartley Fund clients. That's a very important part of our business, yep. And we have a long history with Taft-Hartley, so they're very, very important to us. Number one on our strategic plan is to be very, very solid with Taft-Hartley funds, both the clients we have today, and to grow that business. Number two on our strategic plan is to introduce a broad commercial market entry that incorporates very important advanced solutions to issues that we've talked about in this discussion. The 80-20 rule introduces better tools that help participants and primary care physicians make good choices about courses of treatment and location of treatment and who to get treatment from. And we think of that as a good way for us to have an effect on the commercial market. We'll also bring those tools to the Taft-Hartley market, but we'll build that in order to help push our commercial entry to a more rapid achievement of success. The third element of our plan is geographic expansion. And we're actually working on all of those right now. We're simply pressing we have our foot on the gas a little harder on number one, making sure we continue to be very strong with Taft-Hartley.
Sure.
We also have our foot on the gas pretty strong on the commercial entry, and we have it on strong, but not as strong on geographic expansion. So we're simultaneously working all of those. And we do anticipate that our model will be very relevant in a number of other cities. And we have work going on in a handful of cities around the country already.
Simeon, time flies when we're having fun. This has been a great discussion. You're doing some very innovative things. We've got about a minute to go, and I want to allow you the opportunity to recap and actually tell our audience how they can connect with you.
Well, people ought to feel free to reach out to me at MagnaCare. On the MagnaCare website, you can find a CEO email address. Literally, I believe it's CEO@MagnaCare.com. And you can just type that directly into your email. Let me know. I would love to hear from people. I'm very focused on this business, enjoy it a great deal, and I love talking shop, guys. So anybody who wants to reach out to me should feel free to do that at any time. We believe in the butterfly effect. So not only are we working on what we think are going to be some powerful tools for our clients, but we think we'll demonstrate a few ways to improve the healthcare system and that others will follow our lead and make some additional improvements. And so we're working not only for the benefit of our current and future clients, but we're working for the benefit broadly of the healthcare system, and we're very, very motivated by that vision.
Simeon, appreciated your time and discussion today. Very interesting. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you.
Take care, Simeon. Good stuff, Ron. Continue to be showcase a lot of innovation taking place in this space. So.
Yeah, it also seems to emphasize the idea that, you know, we have always heard for decades now that healthcare is local, and each location needs specific solutions that may be different in the New York, New Jersey area versus another city, but certainly different in metropolitan areas versus some rural areas. So he's bringing specific solutions to the Taft-Hartley Union-type plans, and a lot of that can carry over to other markets. I suspect his expansion plans ultimately would be to other major cities where you have more unions than you might have in rural areas. But, again, he's got very creative ideas, very creative thoughts, and trying to take things that maybe others are doing, but trying to do it a little bit better, a little bit more uniquely, and tailored to his particular audiences. That's what it's all about.
Well, I think, you know, what they're doing with their primary care practice management group is that, we hear a lot. In fact, I had a group in here yesterday talking about direct primary care. I mean, I think accessibility mm-hmm. to direct primary care doctors is so incredibly important going forward, you know, helping consumers find, you know, that primary care doctor in their area. I mean, most people don't have that regular doctor, you know, and they don't know where to go find
them. Right. That's right. And I think, you know, again, at the Atlanta Forum, we'll have, as we had last year, I'm sure more discussion from physicians on, how they're changing their practices, how it's going to impact employers who are using various networks out there. With direct pay model that you mentioned a couple of times, the concierge services, there's new ways that are developing out there with physicians taking bundled payments for services for various conditions. We're seeing a whole new array of possibilities for patients to access care, whether it's getting care more at home, on the internet, using apps, having physicians track you in various ways through what they call the Internet of Things. Everybody's connected to the internet, and that feeds back to the providers that you want to be overseeing your care and monitoring you. Healthcare specialists in various ways, personal coaches. There's so many different ways that are developing out there. It makes it a very exciting market. Confusing, yes, but also at the end of the day, I think new services, new opportunities for patients and consumers of healthcare.
Yeah, actually, to your point, yes, the group we had here yesterday is actually organizing a panel of docs and heads of these practices that are putting in place for employers and their employees direct primary care and concierge medicine models, and really will be a session all about explaining that value proposition. I think a lot of people are confused about it. What is it? What isn't it? You know, what's the value for me, the employer? What's the value for my employee population?
Well, I know a large part of the Atlanta Forum coming up after your Dallas one in the next few weeks. The one in Atlanta in May is going to have a very heavy emphasis on wellness, and that's where your primary care and your doctors are coming in at first glance to keep you healthy, keep you out of some of these expenses. And I think we've got something like 40 different companies from Atlanta and their wellness professionals going to be at and or participating in various parts of the forum. So if anybody's interested in wellness, which is the hot topic in the market today, there's probably no better place to be able to go than come to your Atlanta forum and hear all the different perspectives from different industries, from airline industries to manufacturing industries to service industries, and how each of those are doing something maybe a little different in wellness that might relate to what others are looking for. So it's going to be a very heavy emphasis on wellness and all these issues we've been talking about.
Right, and it'll focus, and now while wellness won't be all we talk about, I mean, the discussion around wellness will be addressing kind of what Simeon was talking about too. We'll be talking about chronic care management. I mean, people forget that that's a big part of health management. You know, chronic care management. So,
absolutely.
But let's turn our hat to legislation and compliance. And to help lead that discussion is our guest Jason Westfall, who's legislative analyst with TASC, one of the country's largest and most innovative TPAs. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm great. You coming to us from Madison?
Yes, sir.
I only have one thing to say to you, and then we'll have a positive interview.
Okay, what's that?
You guys beat my Buckeyes yesterday.
Yes, we did. A little bit of a hot streak.
It actually was a good game. You know, it was a very good game, like it always is. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, we have to give you a little bit of payback for that football championship game from a year ago. So.
Oh, yeah. We won't get into that. Or we'll waste all this time, won't we? So. You know, Jason, you obviously have your hands full with your current role and, you know, helping, you know, your clients and helping your organization, you know, kind of keep their arms around compliance and legislative news. I mean, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're doing to really help your clients. And I can't get I can't let you get off this call without asking a little bit about the Hatch Paulson bill, too, that was just put through by, I guess, this week, right? Put in
sure. Yeah. So. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it was introduced yesterday. So.
Yeah.
So I guess you know. Let's just start by you know saying that you know healthcare policy. It's nothing new. I mean, it's been around forever. But monitoring, you know, legislative and regulatory changes, ensuring plans are up to date. It's more important than ever today than it's ever been before. So I like to use because I'm from Wisconsin. Use a little weather analogy here. So before any, you know, snowstorm or blizzard we get here in the upper Midwest, there's plenty of warning, of course. So meteorologists are constantly on the news predicting record snowfalls, so on and so forth, and that sends people into a frenzy of preparation. But even for a state like Wisconsin that regularly gets a lot of snow, having so much fall so quickly is a huge strain on everybody. And the same really applies when you're talking about an unprecedented amount of legislation or regulation that drops all at the same time. So let's just look at the last month or so and all the things that have come down the pike. So, you know, you had the tax and spending package. So in there you had the Cadillac tax delay. There were things like transit parity, a VEBA fix for funded HRAs. Then shortly after that you had 2015-87, the IRS notice that provided further guidance on the market reforms for group health plans, so on and so forth. Then after that, there was the delay on the ACA reporting. So I think you can see in both cases, whether it be weather or healthcare policy, you know, it really is important that there's careful planning, proper preparation, and prioritization that helps organizations or our clients, you know, dig out.
It just it's such a time drain for your clients, isn't it? I mean, it's just a resource and time drain that for they to keep their head around all this. I mean, it's why you're important in this equation, but it's just, you know, such a resource drain and time drain.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think that, you know, employers need to make a decision where they're going to spend their time and resources. Are they going to employ, you know, or give this job and charge somebody in their HR department with trying to understand and translate all this, or are they going to, you know, outsource it? And yes, you know, there's an expense with that, but there's also a peace of mind and expertise that comes with that.
Yep. Ron, any questions for Jason?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a great area to talk about because it's so important. I was wondering how much activity or what part of your business might be focused on the concerns of the employer. How do you deal with the privacy and security issues around healthcare information and data that's there? And is there any way that you help an employer who's done everything they can, but you can't do everything? There's going to be somebody challenges you. The risk management aspects. How do you help people manage that risk around the privacy and security?
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect segue. So I don't know how many of your listeners know, but DOL had expressed a goal previously that they wanted to audit all employee benefit plans by the end of 2015. Now, obviously, I don't think that happened, but
right.
they're increasing their budgets, and you know they're trying to hit employees and employers harder and harder as we go along. So I don't think that employers fully understand that things like ERISA and HIPAA and things like that are not an option, you know,
right.
and the myriad of risks that a violation in those areas present. So I have a piece of data in front of me here that says 90 to 95% of employers have at least one ERISA or HIPAA violation right. due just because of the confusion and complexity of the regulations that are out there. You know, and it brings, you know, upwards of $100 per day per employee fine.
Right.
And I think employers also need to know that this is not just a large employer or a group issue. It's also for the small guy, for the small employer.
Yep.
Right. Is your main service to keep them informed, or can you refer them, or internal to your organization, do you provide the underlying legal services to help them be in compliance, or is it more focused just on the educational part so that then they can look and find other outside resources and deal with the issues of privacy and security and risk management?
No, we actually do all of that in-house and can provide a client with any of those services. So, for example, my government affairs team consists of, you know, the legislative and policy side, which is myself, but then there's also a legal and a compliance component with that, which are both headed up by attorneys. So that's a good, strong base to start with. But then we are able to do both the information dissemination, but also any kind of, you know, processing that needs to be done as far as ERISA, HIPAA, you know, the ACA reporting as the result of the employer mandate, the PCORI fee. We also have a new service called DocsBox, which does like a notice storage and dissemination service for things like for HIPAA and all those types of notices. And we're even seeing states come out with their own regulations and statutes as far as what notices need to go out and when. So it's hard enough to keep your hands around all 50 states on the federal level, but then you have to drop down into the weeds and see what a state like Wyoming or Alabama or whatever is doing.
Sure. Hey, Jason, what current advice or opinions are you giving your clients as it relates to the Cadillac tax? I know it's been kicked, you know, the can's been kicked down the road a couple of years. What's
Task's angle or position on it?
Yeah, I mean, where do you think it's going to end up? And no one knows, but.
Well, I mean, I think at this point, I think it if I was a betting man, I think it's hard to not see it either being outright repealed or heavily modified. I just, you know, all of the presidential candidates, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, have said, you know, they've come out against it. There's strong bipartisan support in the current Congress. You've got entities like TASC. You know, we've partnered with ECFC and other groups to really lobby and advocate on this issue. So, and I think that actually plays into the issue that we're talking about today, because, you know, if the Cadillac tax goes away, that's a whole lot of revenue that the government just lost.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're really focused on this pay-for mentality. Well, where are they going to get that money? And to your point, nobody knows. I mean, you can't look into a crystal ball and predict it. But, you know, you wonder if one of the areas is in compliance like we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's in a ERISA audit, a HIPAA audit, you know, if they really go after the employer mandate part, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, our position is we want to see it outright fully repealed. But barring that, we'd like to see the employee benefit parts, you know, and FSA and HRA, HSAs carved out of any language.
Yeah, at least that protected, right? At the very least. Very least.
Yeah.
The account-based plan.
Yeah, because protected. Right, because the goal was, you know, Cadillac tax plans. You know, originally when they called this out as part of the ACA, they talked about, you know, they used Goldman Sachs as an example. Well, with the calculation the way it is today, you're going to get Goldman Sachs, but you're also going to get Frank Farmer as well.
Yep. Yep. Well, go ahead. We got about a minute to go. I was just going to give you an opportunity to kind of recap, because We're at the end of the program. It's, you know, wanted you to kind of recap and you know, leave our audience with a few
takeaways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I thank you for that opportunity. So again, you know, I'd go back to what I said first that, you know, this area and this arena is nothing new, but staying up to date and making sure your plans are compliant is just as important today as it's ever been, if not more so. Also, you know, emphasizing the planning, preparation, prioritization, and then, you know, talking about the services that TASC and other entities can provide in the area of, you know, document storage and dissemination, ACA reporting, ERISA, PCORI, you name it. And it goes back to what we talked about earlier as well, which is employers and clients really need to sit back and decide where they're going to spend their money and resources and where they're willing to take on risk. And, you know, by outsourcing some of these services, I think it provides them a peace of mind.
Good discussion. Very, very important piece of the whole puzzle. And I really appreciate you joining us today. You have a great weekend up in Madison.
Thank you. You too. And go Badgers.
Yeah, go Bucks. And to our audience out there, we really appreciate you joining us today. Just a final reminder that if you want to still consider attending Dallas Private Exchange Forum or take a look at our May event coming up May 24-26, go to our website at theihccforum.com where you can find information on Private Exchange Forum in Dallas and IHC Forum and Expo in Atlanta. And we thank you all for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.